The opening ceremony of the 2008 Olympic Games in Beijing was the single most watched event in human history. More than a billion viewers tuned in and a total of 4 billion watched over the course of the Games. Now, the world comes together once again, caught up in the spectacle of the Summer Olympics, returning to London for 2012. And though millions of Americans watch the Games, the major Olympic sports are not the ones that are part of a mainstream American culture. However, because these sports only become part of our lives every 4 years, it's difficult to know all the ins and outs of gymnastics, swimming, beach volleyball, and the other football. So now with the new book, How to Watch the Olympics, the essential guide to the rules, statistics, heroes, and zeros of every sport, David Goldblatt and Johnny Acton look to set us straight and to make our lives easier. And it's a great pleasure to welcome David and Johnny to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
David, let us begin with you of how this came to be.
Well, just exactly that thought. You know, every 4 years the Olympics comes around. Every 4 years I find myself getting terribly interested in water polo and synchronized swimming. And what does one know? It would be great to have an interesting friend on the sofa explaining the basics of how these things are played, to give you a sense of who's into them and their historical background, and a few laughs along the way.
One of the things, Johnny, that I found interesting about the book is that it goes into great detail about these particular sports and events that I certainly know nothing about, but I realized how much in watching in the past, I relied on the commentators who perhaps maybe don't know as much as you guys do.
Well, there's either that problem or they know a great deal and can't remember what it's like not to know what they know now.
Right.
That's the curse of the expert in general. So, yeah, we're absolutely aware of that from our own experience. And really, we're trying to fill in the gaps that the commentators don't fill in.
And to tell you some of the things that they don't want to tell you. They never tell you about all the cheating and the fighting that's gone on in the past and the dark side of a sport or its kind of strange cultural histories. And we thought we like a little bit of that, so we thought the audience would too.
You certainly go into great detail of the rules of the event, but you also give history as well. And I assume that was always part of this, of telling a little bit of history of the event and how it came to be an Olympic event.
Absolutely. Well, sometimes there's a very good story in that. The modern pentathlon is a case in point, which was basically forced on the Games by the chap who invented the modern Olympic Games, Baron de Coubertin. It was his party, so he could have his sport, and he drew up the rules and decided what it would consist of himself. And I think that the history just brings the thing to life. If you realize that people have been having weightlifting competitions since the year dot, since several thousand BC, it just makes it more interesting.
Well, and also it makes it more interesting, Johnny, to understand that weightlifting is a sport really that's, for all the strength factor, is very much done in the head. I mean, I didn't realize that until we started working on this. If those weightlifters don't think they're going to lift the weight, it doesn't matter what else is going on, they're not going to lift it.
Exactly.
Whatever the event, whether it be rowing or shooting or taekwondo or the triathlon or water polo, you ask the question in the book very early in the chapter of why watch this? Why watch table tennis? Why watch sailing? Why watch diving? It's an interesting point.
Well, it's the question I think a lot of people are asking themselves, especially now that there's sort of wall-to-wall TV coverage of all the sports. There are choices to be made. You have to think to yourself, do I really want to sit down and watch Greco-Roman wrestling? Well, in our case, the answer is yes.
But and why is that, Johnny? What is it? What is it that Greco-Roman wrestling offers us?
Yes, please tell us.
Well, it offers a heck of a contrast with WWE wrestling, for a start. It's a sort of surprise. It offers us a spectacle that sometimes can just look like two big guys rolling around on a mat together, that actually has great subtlety and intricacy, and that in certain parts of the world, the streets will be deserted for the Olympic coverage.
An extraordinary drama, Johnny. I mean, when one of them actually manages to lift the other one and sort of, you know, put them through 180 degrees and drop them down on their shoulders, you know, all in the blink of an eye, it's, you know, it is extraordinary. It's explosive.
Absolutely.
And there's Greco-Roman wrestling and freestyle wrestling.
Correct. And I think that freestyle wrestling, stop me if I'm wrong, but reasonably big in the States as a sort of college sport.
And that's the only one that women can actually compete in the Olympics.
That's right, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's the one in which you're allowed to use your legs actively, i.e. Wrap them around the other person's neck. Greco-Roman wrestling is all about upper body strength, and the legs aren't directly involved. I mean, obviously people stand on them, but then you're not allowed to use them to sort of trip or anything like that.
I'm so pleased you're allowed to use them to stand on. That's very helpful.
Are there events that the two of you came across that you really had trouble finding a reason of why people should watch them?
Shooting. Shooting's pretty tricky. I mean, you know, bless the shooters, but it is the micro movements of the trigger finger, you know, and a sport in which posture barely changes and in which, you know, everybody's wearing shades or blinkers. So it's quite hard going. That said, enormous efforts have been made by the shooting fraternity to make it more exciting. And so we do get in the clay pigeon shooting, in the trap shooting, the clay pigeons now explode in a puff of purple smoke when they're shot. And we're getting a lot more close-up camera work. And instead of having, you know, 40 people all shooting at once, they realize it does work better if it's, you know, one against one, a bit like watching darts or something like that. So, you know, the shooting, you know, amazingly actually is now becoming interesting. And at Beijing, where it was one of the opening events, and Li Du came from behind to win the 50-meter three-position rifle competition, you know, the country went mad, and you had an incredibly raucous crowd. Can you imagine a shooting competition that sounds, you know, like a kind of roaring kind of soccer crowd? So shooting is hard, but even shooting is watchable.
Sometimes I found it was quite difficult to persuade people to watch the Olympic version of the sport. So the tennis, for example, few would argue that an Olympic gold is bigger deal than one of the Grand Slams. Or certainly soccer, the Olympics is nothing compared to the World Cup. So sometimes that was a bit tricky.
Do you think that any of this has to do, the excitement level at least, has to do with the venue? So will events go over particularly well in London that perhaps would be different in Beijing?
Yeah, I think rowing is going to be very at home on the Thames near Eton, where the rowing events are taking place.
Except, of course, Johnny, it's not on the Thames.
I hate to
tell you, no, it's a specially constructed sort of lake, not connected up to any rivers at all. Which would
My apologies, he wrote, we split the chapters.
That's okay. But I think you're right, rowing will be a huge thing here because, you know, Britain has got a good chance of winning quite a lot of medals. Similarly, the velodrome, which wasn't, you know, much of a big deal for the Chinese in 2008, is one of the hottest tickets in town because, again, the British are expected to, you know, do really well in the cycling. So I think, you know, some of those sports where we're looking good, sailing, no one was getting too excited about the sailing in Beijing. In fact, it was 800 kilometers from Beijing on the coast. But I think in Weymouth it will be rocking because, you know, Britain's due quite a few medals in the sailing competitions too.
And some of the events are going to be good for the tourists because they start or finish outside Buckingham Palace in what we call the Mall, but you would probably call the Mall. And
who lives in Buckingham Palace, Johnny?
Don't be so ridiculous, don't you? And the beach volleyball is taking place within eyeshot of Buckingham Palace on Horse Guards Parade, which is where soldiers dressed in old-fashioned uniforms do all sorts of old-fashioned things most of the time. So that's going to be quite atmospheric.
Doesn't it back onto 10 Downing Street and the Cabinet Office and all of that as well?
It's near all that.
And St. James's Park is nearby, which is terribly nice.
When the two of you talk about the Olympics coming to your country, I'm interested in the excitement level with the opening ceremonies upon us. Is there some cynicism or sarcasm toward it, or is it something that there's a palpable excitement about?
I think there's a terror that it's not going to be as good as the Beijing opening ceremony, or just a very sort of British, let's underplay the whole thing in case it doesn't turn out very well. But I'm sure it'll be brilliant. It's a sort of national sport, assuming things are going to be dreadful, and then they turn out to be quite good.
We do the same with the weather.
We are having the wettest summer, I think, in history. So the beach volleyball may actually be mud volleyball, for example. It could get interesting if the weather carries on doing what it's been doing the last 6 weeks or so.
Well, I've been watching the coverage about that, and I found it interesting because that had to have been somewhat expected, right?
Well, even by dubious British standards, this is a lousy summer.
I mean, really, it
was never beyond the bounds of possibility that the heavens might open from time to time.
Ultimately, what do you hope people get out of this guide?
Well, I hope they have more fun watching the Olympics. I mean, that's above all our aim. Here it is in all its extraordinary glory. In the end, what it's really meant to be about is the playing of sports and games. And, you know, if you want to get the most out of that and have the most fun, it's great to know a little bit about them before you start.
The name of the book is How to Watch the Olympics by David Goldblatt and Johnny Acton. David and Johnny, I thank you very much for being with us, and I appreciate you sharing your time with us. Have a great time watching the Olympics. I know we will as well.
You too. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is How to Watch the Olympics, The Essential Guide to Rules, Statistics, Heroes, and Zeros of Every Sport. It's published by Penguin. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.